Hey, you guys, it's the Flickers of Fear show. And on this one, doing something a little different, we're doing a request. And this is a movie I had legit never, ever heard of. So I'm really glad that it was brought to my attention because this was like a really cool, weird ass movie from the 1970s. And it's called The Shout from 1978. Now, supporter and friend of the show, Rob Levinson, who is also a filmmaker, so please go and check his stuff out. He actually sent me a link to this film, which you can watch for free on YouTube, or at least you could at this recording. I think you can also watch it on the British Film Institute website, as far as I'm aware, because I think Mark Kermode talked a little bit about it as well. This movie, I'm just like amazed I never heard of it, because like I said, and I've said this many times on the show before, but probably, you know, if somebody put a gun to my head and said that I had to pick a favorite decade for horror movies, it would probably be the 70s. And mostly that's just because they had a real vibe to them. And also some of them were just like so weird and like off the wall. I mean, there was just so much interesting shit going on in the 70s. And I just keep stumbling across all of these movies that were made back then that I had never heard of before. So it's just kind of like the whole decade was just kind of an embarrassment of riches. And I'm really, really surprised that I had never heard about this one because it actually did quite well. I think it got in the 1978 or 1979, I think it got the Grand Jury Prize, the Cannes Film Festival. And it has some pretty big like British stalwart actors in it. Alan Bates is in there, who was also, well, he was in a ton of stuff, but he was in Zorba the Greek. He was in Women in Love, the Ken Russell movie, you know, among many, many, many other things. This also has John Hurt in a starring role. Susanna York also has a very young Tim Curry in a small role. And interestingly, a very, very young Jim Broadbent was in this as dude who falls in a cow pie. Like while he's playing cricket. So there's that as well. I didn't even recognize him actually. So this movie, it's set in the UK. It's set in England, and it was shot in Devon, I believe. And it's from a short story that came out in the 1920s, either 1924 or 1926. I couldn't like get a handle on that, by Robert Graves, who was a British writer. However, the director of this is a Polish director, Jerzy Skolimowski. And he did a bunch of movies, I believe, in the 70s and 80s that were set in Britain. He did one called Moonlighting. He did one called Dead End, or Deep End, rather. And notably, also, he was the co-writer on Roman Polanski's first film, Knife in the Water, back in the 60s. And he was kind of known for doing these sort of weird, like, art house type of movies. And this one is kind of like that, too. But it was just so weird. I just loved the vibe of this. And I just love the concept of it because it's just so bizarre and off the wall. And like I said, this is one of those weird things that like you saw in the 70s and really not any other decade. I mean, there was really something about the 70s. I don't know what it was. This movie reminds me of, I don't know, like maybe I'm totally crazy with this, but it gave me a Picnic at Hanging Rock sort of vibe, the Peter Weir movie. It reminded me also of Robert Altman's Images, which also had Susanna York in it, now that I'm thinking about it. Had a little bit of The Wicker Man, and it almost had a little bit, I don't know, but it's not exactly like the William Friedkin movie, The Ninth Configuration, which was also weird as shit. They're not really that similar, but they kind of like, they gave me the same kind of feeling about it. I don't really know if I can explain it better than that. But so if you like those four movies, then you probably should like try and seek this one out because it'll probably be right up your alley because it's like this movie is like weird as shit. And as far as I know, I haven't read the short story that it's based on, but I did read a pretty like in-depth synopsis of it. And it seems like this was a pretty faithful adaptation of the short story. So let me see if I can explain what's going on. So at the beginning, it's like it's a story within a story. So you have like a frame story at the beginning. The frame story is that there's a cricket match and it's like the local townsfolk playing against the inmates of an insane asylum. So they're all like playing this cricket match. Now, Tim Curry's character, who's playing a character called Robert Graves, who, if you'll remember, is the name of the real guy that wrote the story that this movie was based on. So he's playing that character. I don't think he's an inmate at the time. He just came there like to help out with the cricket match or something from what I could determine. So he's there to be a scorer for the cricket match. And he's in the little booth. Forgive me, British people. I really don't know much of anything about cricket. Like, I kind of get the gist of it, but I don't know any of the lingo or anything like that. So forgive me if I like really mess something up. Because most of the time I'm like playing, I'm like, how the fuck do you even play this game? I don't know. But yeah, so apparently there's two scorers. And Tim Curry's character, whose name is Robert Graves, like I said, is one of them. And then he's in the little scoring booth or whatever it is with this other creepy dude played by Alan Bates. And this guy's name is Charles Crossley. And while they're talking, Crossley, who is very kind of a little weird and very, very intense, he's basically like, I'm going to tell you a story and every bit of it is true. It's like, can I, tell you the story? Will you still be able to score like while I'm telling it to you? And, Tim Curry's like, sure, man, whatever. So most of the movie, so that's kind of like the frame story that there's like a bunch of people playing cricket, some of whom are insane asylum inmates. And then there's these two guys in this thing, and he's telling about a story of something that happened before. So it's like kind of a flashback. So the story that he tells is quite a doozy. Basically, there's a dude named Anthony, played by John Hurt. And him and his wife, who's played by Susanna York, they kind of live this idyllic, like English countryside sort of existence or whatever. Now it's implied, actually, I don't even know if I'd say implied. It's pretty obvious that John Hurt's character, Anthony, is fucking around with the wife of, I think he's like the shoemaker or the cobbler or whatever, like in the village. Now, Anthony is a musician. He plays the church organ, like for the services and stuff. And he also seems like he's like an experimental musician because he's always, at first, like when they showed him like in his studio, I thought he was like a Foley artist because he's, he's doing stuff that like Foley artists would do. Like, hey, I'm gonna like have a tray full of marbles and put water in it and like roll in front of a microphone and stuff. But I guess he's supposed to be like an experimental musician. So that's what he does kind of on the side. He's also real into Francis Bacon, the painter. So there's like a lot of Francis Bacon type of imagery in this. Well, not just type of imagery, but there are. He has like Francis Bacon, pictures and stuff like of his paintings, like on the wall and stuff. So, like I say, you can kind of see what vibe this movie's giving off. So he's at he comes back from the church service one day where he's been playing the organ. Now, Alan Bates, as Crossley, has surreptitiously let the air out of Anthony's tires, like on his bike. So that when Anthony is there trying to fix the bike so he can go back home, Crossley is basically like used that for distraction so he could sit there and kind of talk to him. And he really kind of gets up in his shit and he's like talking about, what did you think about that sermon? And he's kind of talking about sort of, religious-y kind of stuff. And then basically he very cheekily invites himself to lunch. He's like, oh, I'm on a walking tour. I haven't eaten in 2 days, blah, blah, blah. So it's almost, and he's being kind of like not aggressive aggressive, but he's being like real pushy. And Anthony's just kind of like, okay, whatever. So he brings the dude to his house for Sunday lunch. So, they have the roast and all that. So he sits down to eat, and even though he says he's really hungry, he only eats like this tiny little potato or whatever. And you know that he's up to something sketchy, not only because he's saying really weird shit and acting really weird and creepy, but they tell him like he wants to wash his hands, like he smushes a fly with his finger like on the window, and then he asks to go to the bathroom so he can wash his hands, and then he's kind of like farting around in their house, like he goes in the spare room and like tears the like the duvet off, and he's like sticking his face into Susanna York's like pantyhose. And it's like, so he's doing like weird shit like that. So then he comes back down, they're all eating, it's super awkward. And then he starts saying that he lived in the Australian outback for 18 years and that he had an Aboriginal wife. And he basically says that he killed all his children in the sense, like, but that was okay, like it was legal. And he has like this big long, and then he starts talking about how he learned essentially like Aboriginal magic, like black magic, so he can do all this stuff. Now, I should note too that before they even met this dude, like before Anthony even met this dude outside of the church, like him and Susanna York were like, they were out on the dunes or whatever, and they had both fallen asleep, and they both had the same dream about this dude in like a top coat, like a tailcoat, coming toward them, like pointing a bone at them or something like that. So they both had the same dream. So you know that this guy has like some supernatural shit going on. So at first you kind of think like, is this dude nuts? Like he says that he can do all this, like he can do all this black magic. And he talks about like pointing the bone at people and making them die. And then he says, and this is why the movie is called The Shout. He says that he learned to do, and it took him a really long time, but he learned to do this thing called like the desolate shout, I think it's called, where basically it's just this noise that you make and it'll, everyone that hears it will drop dead. So Anthony obviously does not believe this, but he is intrigued because, like I said, he's an experimental musician. So he's like, oh, I'd be really interested to hear that, you know, because he doesn't really believe him, obviously, because if somebody told you that, like, you totally would not believe it. So, you know, Crossley's but you would die. So they work out this thing where he kind of like plugs his ears somewhat or whatever. So then they go out to the dunes. He's like, we'll go way out to the dunes like early in the morning when no one else is around because I don't want to like, you know, accidentally kill people with my magical shout voice. You know what I mean? So they go out to do it and it's like, and he does it. And it's this crazy fucking like primal, like fucking, it sounds like, I don't even know. Like it sounds like a fucking jet taking off or something like that. It's crazy. So he goes out there and he does it and it works, meaning it doesn't kill Anthony, like, but it does for sure, like, knocks him out. And then you see like later that it has killed some other people, like it killed like the shepherd and his sheep and stuff like that. So there's like dead animals like all around and whatnot. So it's just like this crazy shit. But then Anthony turns up like in bed later and he's still okay. And then the dog is okay. Like, cause they took the dog with him and it looked like the dog got killed also by the voice. The thing about, so Crossley, apparently this might be an unreliable narrator situation because it's left kind of ambiguous because it's Crossley telling this story to Robert Graves or Tim Curry's character in the present. And Crossley is in the asylum. He's like an inmate there. So you're not really sure if he's just talking about this, like he's just making it up because he's a nut, or if this shit really happened. Because when he's talking about the story in the past, like, you know, when he does the shout, it really does work. So you're not really, like I said, it's a weird fucking movie. It's like really, really weird. So what he does, so apparently he has not only the power to kill people just by shouting, but he also, if he has a possession of yours, because at one point he takes Susanna York's buckle, like off her sandal, and he buries it somewhere. And so he is like, has control of her now. So basically he makes her fall in love with him. And so much so that she's just kind of following him around everywhere. And it's like, Anthony comes back to the house and Crossley's there and he's like, oh, well, I'm taking your wife, Rachel, to bed and there's nothing you can do about it. And he's like, what the fuck? And she's just like, yeah, that's how it goes, man. You know what I mean? So it's just like, so he's basically like taking over, like he can use black magic to control people. You know what I mean? And he can like tell them what to do. He doesn't really seem to have a motivation for this or reason for this. It's just, he's just telling this story. Like, I just randomly targeted this couple just because. I don't really know, like there's no intention, like, I mean, there's no reason for him to target them in particular, or not that's revealed anyway. So he basically just insinuates himself like, yeah, I'm gonna stay in your house for a few months and you do, and like they have to do what he tells them to do because he has like black magic power over them. But as it goes on, it ends up that finally Anthony comes to the realization of what's going on and he goes to the dune where he and his wife Rachel, who's played by Susanna York, I know I called her Susanna York like all the time, but her name's Rachel in the movie. So he goes to the dune where they were sleeping at the first time and he digs around and he finds all the stuff, because Crossley hasn't just been controlling them. He's also been controlling, because like when he shouted, like a lot of people in the village like got sick. Like some of the people died, like out in the, you know, they were out in the dunes and stuff, but people in the village like got really sick or they felt really weird or whatever. And I think he was also controlling the shoemaker, the cobbler guy, who they had gone to like fix Rachel's shoe. And so there was all kind of weird shit going on. So Anthony goes back to the dune and he digs around and he finds all the stuff. And then he finds this one thing that's like a rock. And from something that Crossley said to him before, he's like, oh, this is like the source of Crossley's power. So he starts to break it. And then at that point, Crossley's power starts to dissolve. The cops come to get him for the kids that he killed. Like I said, he said that he killed his own children. So the cops came and then he starts shouting and like people start dropping dead. And it's this crazy fucking story. And then it jumps back to the present day, like on the cricket field. And it's started to rain really hard. All the insane asylum people are like flipping out because, you know, they're like stripping their clothes off and screaming and whatever. And it's just like this chaos. So you don't really know. Like, it does seem like, so Crossley is like freaking out and he's like, I'm getting ready to like shout or whatever. And at this point, like Tim Curry's character is kind of like, you know, don't, because now he kind of believes it. But what ends up happening is that lightning strikes the scorer's little building there and ends up killing Crossley before he can shout. So you never really knew if his shout actually could kill people or if he's just a crazy person that just thought that. Because I should note that two of the inmates at the asylum who were playing the cricket game were John Hurt and Susanna York. So you're led to believe that if this shit really happened, then the craziness of what happened like ended up with both of them being put into the asylum. But it could just be that Crossley is a nut and he's just making up this story about them for whatever reason. So like I said, if that description of it sounds like it's a weird, weird movie. And it's like really, really, it just had this really cool, like unsettling, you know, kind of vibe to it. It's kind of like there was even bits where like a little bit was like slow motion. I will say that I think the best thing about this, I mean, other than the acting, which is great, but the best thing about this is the sound design. And that's like what a lot of people, because like I said, it's kind of about, you know, the movie being about this guy that can shout and kill people and the character of Anthony being a musician and being an experimental, you know, doing sound effects and stuff like that. I should note that there's like two guys, what's their names? Tony Banks and Mike Rutherford from Genesis. They did a lot of the music and sound design for this. So it's really like a cool, so if you like, there's not a lot of them, but it's like a kind of a subgenre of horror movies that are sort of based around sound, then this is probably one you want to check out. Because I'm not saying that that's not like the overriding. I mean, there's a bunch of other shit going on too, because Crossley doesn't just have the, you know, the shout that kills thing, but he can also like just control people by just like telling them what to do, because he has, you know, an object of theirs that he is able to like put a spell on and he can like control you. So he has other things going on too, but what, you know, one of the main threads that runs through this is the power of sound, you know, and so the sound design is like really, really cool. And I think that's one of the things that makes it so creepy, because I think sound is kind of an underrated aspect of a lot of horror films. I mean, if you want to prove to yourself that that's true, watch a horror movie with the sound off and it is instantly not as scary anymore because it doesn't have any of the background sounds or the music or anything like that. So I really, really like movies that explore that, like explore what can be done with sound. And so I think that this was like kind of really innovative use of that. And it's really strange because, as I said, I had literally never heard of this movie. I had never heard anybody talk about it. It's like once Rob showed it to me and I watched it and I was like, wow, man, this movie is like so, it's so cool and it's so weird and it's like, nobody ever talks about it. I went around and I did find a few reviews of it, like on some horror blogs and stuff. Cause this is, I would call this a horror movie, but like I said, it's a psychological horror movie in the same vein as Picnic at Hanging Rock, that kind of stuff, where it's kind of like these psychological horror movies. You know, you could argue that they aren't horror movies, but they're really kind of like unnerving. They just have this unnerving vibe to them. And this one, I think definitely, maybe even more than Picnic at Hanging Rock, has more of a, you know, more of a claim, I guess, to being a horror movie, because it does actually involve black magic, or at least somebody thinking that they have black magic powers. So I think that pretty much qualifies. But yeah, as I said, thank you very much to Rob Levinson for sending me the link to this, because it's rare to like for somebody to come up with a movie that I haven't seen or at least heard of. And this is one that I never seen or heard of, even though I really, really like British cinema. I really like British horror movies from this era and earlier. So I'm really shocked that I had never seen it, especially since it has so many big stars in it. And so thank you very much, Rob, for pointing this out to me and asking me to do a review on it, because this one was it's kind of like a hidden gem, you know. So as I said, it's on YouTube for free. You know, the quality isn't fantastic, As far as I know, I don't think it's gotten remastered or anything like that. Maybe if you have access to the British Film Institute, the BFI or whatever website, and you can watch it, there might be a remastered version on there. I'm not real sure. I don't know really how to go about watching that. I saw the Marc Kermode introduction of it because that was on YouTube, so I watched that. That's only a couple of minutes long, where he was kind of talking about it. But yeah, so this is definitely one that if you like weird 70s cinema, like I said, if you like Picnic at Hanging Rock, Images, sort of Wicker Man-y, sort of in the sense that it's supernatural elements perhaps introduced into the idyllic English countryside type of thing. That's how it's similar to The Wicker Man. But if you like movies like that, then definitely check this one out, because I feel like I had never heard of it, and I know probably a lot of other people haven't either. So yeah, definitely check it out. And again, thanks, Rob, for bringing it to my attention, because I probably would never have seen it otherwise, and I really, really dug it. So that'll do it for this Flickers of Fear, and I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.